Iowa Capital Dispatch 4, January 27th, 2023. I'm your reader, Stephen Gager. Ag and environment, government and politics. Legislation would increase number of out-of-state deer hunters by 25%. By Jared Strong, January 24th, 2023. An Iowa Senate bill would increase the number of people who don't live in Iowa who can hunt the state's antlered white-tailed deer each year from 6,000 to 7,500, and those hunters would be encouraged to shoot female deer, too. Senate File 42 advanced with Republican support out of a Senate subcommittee Tuesday. Similar legislation failed to get enough support for passage in 2020. Out-of-state hunters pay a premium to shoot deer in Iowa, and the demand for those licenses regularly exceeds the long-running 6,000 limit. The state received about 10,700 applications for the licenses in 2022 and about 11,300 in 2021. Those hunters pay about $650, compared with about $70 for residents, so the increase in available licenses in the Senate bill has the potential to boost state hunting revenues by more than $960,000. The hunters also contribute an unknown amount of money to local economies for lodging, meals, and supplies. Quote, non-resident deer hunters do certainly provide a positive economic impact, said Jace Elliott, the state deer biologist for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. The bill was introduced by Senator Mike Klimisch, a Spillville Republican. He did not immediately respond to requests for comment for this article. Klimisch's bill includes an incentive for the hunters to shoot does. Iowa law requires out-of-state hunters to purchase an antlerless-only license with the general deer license, but only about 20% of the antlerless-only licenses result in kills, said Senator Don Driscoll, a Williamsburg Republican who led the subcommittee meeting. Deer population control measures usually focus on culling does, which can give birth to two or more fawns each year. The new legislation enables out-of-state hunters to earn a, quote, preference point, end quote, if they shoot a doe in an area with a high deer population. Those points are used to increase the likelihood of obtaining another non-resident hunting license in the future. Hunters can generally accumulate one preference point per year, either by entering the drawing to get a license and not being selected, or by buying a point without submitting an application for a license. Either way, the cost is about $60 per point. The DNR sets out-of-state quotas for different areas of the state, and it's the most difficult to obtain a license to shoot deer with a bow in southern Iowa, and often requires four or five preference points, said Tyler Harms, a DNR wildlife research biometrician. That means it can take 4 or 5 years to get a license. The state allows up to 35% of out-of-state licenses to be used for bow seasons, which are generally considered the best opportunity to shoot a big buck. And the vast majority of those hunters come to Iowa for bucks. Elliott said more than 95% of deer shot with non-resident general deer licenses, in which hunters can shoot any sex of deer, are bucks. That compares with about 50% among residents. But the success rate among out-of-state hunters is less than 50%, which means the total number of additional bucks that would be felled under the new legislation might be fewer than 750. Quote, it can seem like a lot of deer, but in the grand scheme of things, it's not, Elliott said. Hunters killed about 110,000 deer during the most recent fall and winter deer seasons, he said, which is a 7% increase from the previous year. Harms doubted the legislation would have a significant impact on the overall deer population if it becomes law, but said, quote, we'll certainly watch it. The Iowa Bowhunters Association and the Iowa Conservation Alliance oppose the legislation, according to their lobbyist declarations. Jim Obradovich, who represents the Iowa Conservation Alliance, said there is a deer study by the DNR, which lawmakers required with new legislation last year, that is still pending. One purpose of the study is to measure the deer population densities in different counties to help guide hunting policies. Quote, we're opposed to this because we see this as kind of jumping the gun on that process, Obradovich said. Senator Liz Bennett, a Cedar Rapids Democrat on the subcommittee, called the bill an, quote, interesting idea, end quote, but also said it was too soon to consider it. Editor's note, Jim Obradovich is married to Iowa Capital Dispatch Editor-in-Chief Kathy Obradovich. Education, government, and politics. Tenure ban doesn't advance, but GOP paying attention to campus free speech. By Robin Upsell, January 24, 2023. Legislation banning tenure at Iowa's public universities is unlikely to move forward, but a Republican lawmaker said he hopes the institutions know legislators are, quote, paying attention, end quote, to problems like freedom of speech on Iowa college campuses. Quote, I'm tired, and a lot of legislators are tired playing whack-a-mole with some of the issues that are going on in our universities, Representative Stephen Holt, Republican Denison, said. Ellipses. I likely will not bring this bill forward again, but I will say this. I hope you take the message back. Holt chaired a House Education Subcommittee Tuesday on House File 48, which proposed prohibiting tenure at Iowa's public universities. Lobbyists with the State Board of Regents, business organizations, and agricultural groups registered in opposition to the legislation. The legislation would affect professors at the University of Iowa, Iowa State University, and University of Northern Iowa. Tenure is offered to faculty members as a form of job security, quote, in order to create and maintain an atmosphere for the free exchange of ideas and inquiry necessary for educating Iowa students and advancing knowledge in democracy, according to the Board of Regents website. Speakers with the university system said during the meeting that tenured professors must go through a rigorous review process, which takes 6 to 7 years, and that those tenured are still subject to annual reviews, where problems in teaching can be addressed. Rachel Boone, Chief Academic Officer for the Regents, said the notion that professors with tenure cannot be let go for any reason is incorrect. There are multiple reasons why tenured faculty can be dismissed for, quote, just cause, end quote, she said, which can mean anything from professional dishonesty to demonstrated incompetence to substantial neglect of duty. Quote, there are myths about faculty members who just don't come to class to teach. That would be neglect of duty, Boone said. That would be something we can't address. That's for cause, serious misconduct, and anything that's prohibited by law, prohibited by board policy. Ellipses. All of these are things that we're looking at on an annual basis to help us manage our faculty ranks. Legislation prohibiting tenure was brought up in the 2021 session, driven by concerns voiced by Republican lawmakers that universities were stifling free speech of conservative students. Keith Saunders, the region's chief government relations officer, said he understands that there are some tenured faculty at Iowa universities who have said or done controversial things. Quote, don't throw out an entire system that's allowed us to become one of the best educational systems in the country, Saunders said. Instead, let us deal with them, and we do. Tenure is one of the most desirable recruiting strategies that Iowa's higher education institutions hold, Saunders said, and getting rid of it would make it difficult to attract quality educators and researchers. Removing tenure would reverse the 150 years of accomplishment that Iowa's university system has worked to build, he said. Other speakers with organizations, including the Iowa Chamber Alliance, Iowa Cattlemen's Association, and Iowa Veterinary Medical Association, spoke against the bill at the subcommittee meeting, reiterating concerns that removing tenure would put Iowa at a disadvantage in both research and job recruitment. Quote, when our salaries are less than those offered at other institutions, we need every advantage possible to attract the best and brightest, Saunders said. Without having tenure, which is seen as an ultimate accomplishment of a faculty member, if that's not able to be offered in Iowa, we will become an educational backwater. Holt said he understands the concerns lobbyists brought up and will likely not bring the legislation forward again. But he said Iowa universities must address concerns that conservative students have brought up of, quote, how their values are assaulted, end quote, in some classrooms. But he said that universities are doing a good job of addressing these problems, pointing to the dean of UI's College of Dentistry and Dental Clinics apologizing to members of the House Government Oversight Committee in 2021 for actions on students' right to free speech. Quote, I just would appreciate if you would take the message back that we're paying attention, Holt said. DC Bureau, Government and Politics. Postal Service on-time performance similar in rural, urban areas, report finds. By Adam Goldstein, January 24, 2023. Washington. Challenges with the cash-strapped United States Postal Service sent many Americans to their wits' end during the COVID-19 pandemic, especially in communities reliant on the mail for essential goods. Yet despite concerns from members of Congress that recent service changes hit rural communities more than urban centers, a new report from the U.S. Government Accountability Office found few significant differences in on-time USPS delivery rates between these two locales. Quote, the report validates expectations that there are few differences in service performance for urban and rural areas, said Angela Curtis, the USPS Vice President of Delivery Operations, in a written response to the report from the GAO, a government watchdog. The Postal Service's financial viability has been on the GAO's high-risk list since 2009. The GAO said that in response, the Postal Service has recently, quote, made changes to its operations designed to restore financial self-sufficiency. New Hampshire's Senator's Request. Senator Maggie Hassan, Democrat, New Hampshire, a member of the Committee on Homeland Security and Government Affairs, has consistently highlighted the importance of mail service to rural communities since before the COVID-19 pandemic began. Hassan asked the GAO to examine performance differences between rural and urban areas. Quote, I am concerned that USPS's efforts to address financial and operational challenges in the past several years have disproportionately affected rural communities, Hassan said in her January 2020 request letter to the GAO. Quote, I regularly hear from our constituents about various mail delivery issues, from transit time that seems to be longer than USPS reports, to mail that is not delivered at all, end quote. GAO auditors analyzed on-time delivery performance for the four largest USPS mail types by volume from October 2020 to December 2021. The team specifically examined data from first-class mail, marketing mail, periodical, and package deliveries. These categories collectively comprise more than 90% of USPS mail volume and more than half of USPS revenue, according to the GAO report, which was published January 12th. At the national and regional levels, the auditors found no differences of 5% or greater in on-time delivery rate between urban and rural areas for any of the mail product setting. At the postal level, they found no difference of 5% or greater in on-time delivery rates for packages between urban and rural areas. The GAO did cite that 8 of 50 postal districts nationwide had a 5% or greater difference in on-time mail delivery rate of periodicals, which varied between favoring urban and rural areas. The districts in which on-time USPS periodical deliveries occurred 5% or more frequently in rural areas than urban included Louisiana, Georgia, South Florida, Northern Illinois, Eastern Pennsylvania, plus Delaware and Maryland. In Hawaii and the district comprising Massachusetts and Rhode Island, on-time periodical deliveries occurred 5% or more frequently in urban areas than rural areas. The USPS justified this disparity to the GAO by noting, quote, periodicals arrive at the facility multiple times per day, which can create staffing conflicts between package and periodical delivery, end quote. The USPS reported that it plans to move up the time in which periodicals enter the mail system in order to minimize these delays. The GAO also found that Hawaii was the only state with a 5% or greater split in on-time delivery rate of first-class and marketing mail between urban and rural areas, favoring urban areas. The authority said USPS attributed this difference to the fact that Hawaii brings in mail via boat and plane. These modes of transport can lead to problems in rural service due to limited cargo space, according to USPS officials cited in the report. A lack of demographic monitoring. In the same report, the GAO determined that after the USPS makes service and operational changes, administrators do not have a system for collecting data on impacts to demographic groups. In 2021, the USPS implemented two nationwide adjustments to service standards, extending the time carriers could take to deliver first-class mail and periodicals, along with first-class packages. The auditors found the USPS modeled the effects that this change would have on rural areas before consulting the Postal Regulatory Commission for an advisory opinion, as required by federal law. However, the GAO also found that after these services change were implemented, the USPS used its existing software to monitor impacts, which does not account for urban and rural differences in delivery performance. The authors of the report also looked at three major USPS operational changes affecting rural communities in 2021. These changes included consolidating facilities, optimizing delivery routes, and reducing mail carrier trips by merging priority and regular runs. Operational changes within the USPS do not require postal regulators' approval. The GAO found that while the USPS consulted agency stakeholders on impacts to rural service prior to making these changes, once again, they did not monitor for effects on delivery performance after the changes were executed. USPS officials told the GAO that given no effect on rural deliveries was expected from these changes, the agency did not monitor for impacts to these communities. Education, government, and politics. Governor Kim Reynolds celebrates victory as school choice program becomes law. By Robin Opsahl, January 24, 2023. After years of debate and a decisive election with school choice at center stage, Governor Kim Reynolds signed her private school scholarship program into law Tuesday. Students and staff of Iowa private schools gathered around the lectern in the Capitol Rotunda as Reynolds and supporters celebrated passing the legislation, which cleared the Senate less than 12 hours earlier. The governor thanked Republican lawmakers, quote, school choice, end quote, advocates, and parents for their work in getting the bill through the legislative process. Quote, I urge the General Assembly to think big and to aim high, to ignore the hysteria that always accompanies school change, Reynolds said. In passing the Students First Act, that is what you did, and I cannot think of a more worthy cause to aim high and dream big for than the future of our children. The Iowa House and Senate spent nearly 10 hours debating the legislation, which Reynolds named as her top priority for the 2023 legislative session. The law establishes an Education Savings Account, ESA, program for K-12 students, giving students an account of $7,598 each year to use for private school tuition and associated costs. Starting in the 2023-2024 school year, all kindergartners, Iowa public school students, and private school students with a family income of 300% or below the federal poverty line will be eligible to receive funds from the program. The income eligibility expands to 400% of the federal poverty line in the second year, and there is no limit starting in the third year. While Republicans celebrated the victory, Democrats and public school advocates continued to express disappointment in the legislation. Democratic Senator Claire Selcy of West Des Moines shouted, quote, nobody wants vouchers, end quote, from the rotunda balcony. She was drowned out by a standing ovation for the governor who said, quote, we will never give up, end quote, on school choice legislation. Critics said the legislation would harm public schools, especially those in rural areas. Iowa State Education Association President Mike Buranek said passing the governor's bill, legislators were ignoring their constituents' wishes. Almost three-fourths of Iowa public schools are counties with no option for private schools, he said. And this legislation prioritizes private school students over the 92% of Iowa students in public schools. Quote, make no mistake, this is not a war between public schools and private schools, Buranek said in a statement. It is a conflict between how taxpayer money is spent on private schools without equal access and no accountability or taxpayer oversight. Elected officials have a responsibility to serve all the people of our great state. This legislation serves just a few with all the people's money, end quote. But the governor said the bill helps Iowa's public education system and teachers by allowing schools to put certain unspent categorical funds, such as dollars for talented and gifted programs, toward teacher salaries. Reynolds also pointed to the bill's provision to give roughly $1,205 per private school student to the public school district in which that family resides. Just because this bill gave parents the option to choose to send their children to private schools does not mean that they will not continue working to better public schools, she said. Quote, we're going to continue to work with them and see if there's other things that we can do to help, so it's not a one and done, Reynolds told reporters. We're going to continue to monitor it. Just make sure that we're meeting the mark and doing what we intended, end quote. Estimates from the Governor's Office and Legislative Services Agency estimate the program will cost $106.9 million in the upcoming fiscal year and will cost roughly $345 million per year once income restrictions are fully phased out. But Democrats question whether the state will see additional costs when working with a third-party vendor to administer the program. The governor said a request for proposals, RFP, on the program contract will be posted Tuesday, which will contain details on potential associated costs. It will also address concerns for transparency, she said. Other states with private school scholarship programs, like Arizona, have had instances of educational companies or parents using state funds fraudulently. The state's contract will put, quote, parameters in place, end quote, to give the state recourse if problems occur with Iowa's programs, she said. Quote, we're going to make sure that cybersecurity is taken into account, she said. We want to make sure that we do have transparency and accountability in place so that we can monitor it to make sure that there isn't any fraud. And that's why we're really being very purposeful about issuing the RFP, end quote. The ESA program is not the end of the road for Republicans' education reform goals this session. Reynolds also highlighted in her Condition of the State address a renewed push for, quote, parental rights, end quote, in public schools, calling for increased transparency measures such as making all class materials and student records accessible to parents. House Republicans have also introduced bills focused on curriculum and LGBTQ plus issues in Iowa public schools. Proposals include requiring school districts to get written consent from a child's parent or guardian before providing any accommodations in using a transgender student's preferred name or pronouns, as well as banning instruction or material on sexual orientation or gender identity to students in kindergarten through third grade. Republicans brought up LGBTQ plus issues in public schools as a reason why parents demanded alternatives to Iowa's public school system in the ESA program debates Monday. Senator Jesse Green, Republican Boone, said some Iowa public schools policies, such as letting transgender children use the restrooms and locker rooms which match their gender identity, prevent Iowans from having their children educated, quote, without violating their values, end quote. Quote, if we can't trust some of our public schools on biology in the bathroom, what makes us believe that we can trust those same schools on biology in the classroom? Green said. Ellipses. Yet on something so fundamental is basic biology, parents currently have no choice in public schools. Criminal justice and policing. Justice. Judge upholds state's decision to decertify officer who had sex with teen. By Clark Kaufman, January 24, 2023. An Iowa police officer who resigned because of a sexual relationship with a 17-year-old girl has lost his bid to regain his certification as a law enforcement officer. Jacob Smith, 32, who worked as a police officer for the cities of Sumner and Carroll, filed a court petition last year seeking judicial review of the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy Council's decision to strip him of his law enforcement certification. Smith argued his termination was not for a good cause, and so his subsequent decertification was unwarranted. District Court Judge Joseph Seedlin rejected that argument, ruling last week that the evidence supported the council's decision. Smith first began working as a law enforcement officer when he was hired by the city of Sumner in January 2014. He remained employed there until May 4, 2015, when he was fired for actions unbecoming of a police officer. The firing was tied to a video posted to social media that indicated Smith was drinking in the company of underage individuals while at a friend's home. It was also alleged that he had sent inappropriate private messages on Facebook to a 16-year-old girl, according to the report by the Carroll Times-Herald. In September 2015, the city of Carroll hired Smith as a police officer. He remained there until July 2017. When he resigned amid allegations that he had engaged in a sexual relationship with a 17-year-old girl he had met while on duty. After the Times-Herald published an article about Smith, he filed a libel lawsuit against the newspaper and reporter Jared Strong, who now works for the Iowa Capital Dispatch. District Judge Thomas Bice dismissed the case, ruling that the newspaper article was, quote, accurate and true and the underlying facts undisputed, end quote. In October 2021, the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy initiated steps to decertify Smith. A hearing was held in December 2021 and in January 2022. An administrative law judge proposed that Smith's certification be revoked. On June 2, 2022, Diane Venenga of the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy Council confirmed the judge's decision. In appealing that decision to district court, Smith's attorney argued, quote, the age of consent in Iowa is 16 years of age, end quote, and there was, quote, no cap on how much older one can be when having sexual relations with a 16 or 17-year-old, end quote. In ruling against Smith, Judge Seidlin noted that Smith met the 17-year-old girl while interacting with her in his professional capacity as a police officer, then began an intimate relationship with her, with the girl moving in with Smith during her senior year of high school. Quote, interestingly, the counsel found these facts from civil litigation previously before the Iowa District Court, where Smith claimed libel, intentional infliction of emotional distress, and false light invasion of privacy against a reporter for writing an article about his resignation and relationship, Seidlin said in his ruling. Smith's conduct, Seidlin added, quote, has been publicly associated with the department as evidence in the news article. Such implications can sow doubt in the minds of Carroll citizens, end quote. In his ruling, Seidlin also stated that the Carroll Police Department's code of conduct requires officers to conduct their professional and private life in such a manner as to reflect credit on the department. Smith himself, Seidlin noted, had conceded in a deposition tied to the libel case that his relationship with a teenager, quote, looks like and, quote, wasn't right, end quote. The judge found the evidence in the case, quote, fully supports the counsel's application of the law to the facts in finding Smith's conduct to be sufficient grounds for discretionary discharge. Criminal justice and policing, D.C. Bureau, government and politics, justice. Wave of mass shootings prompts Biden to call yet again for assault weapons ban. By Ariana Figueroa, January 24, 2023. Washington. Following a mass shooting on the eve of Lunar New Year, in which 11 people in a predominantly Asian neighborhood in California were killed, President Joe Biden again urged Congress to pass legislation banning assault weapons. Communities across America, quote, have been struck by tragedy after tragedy, including mass shootings from Colorado Springs to Monterey Park, and daily acts of gun violence that do not make national headlines, Biden said in a statement. There have been several mass shootings in the span of 72 hours across America. In Monterey Park in Southern California, east of Los Angeles, on Saturday night, 11 people at a dance hall were killed. In Half Moon Bay, California, on Monday, 7 people who worked on a farm were killed. In Louisiana, a dozen people were shot at a nightclub early Sunday. In Iowa, 2 students were killed and an educator shot Monday at an education program for at-risk youth in Des Moines. Vice President Kamala Harris, who is from California, will travel to the state following the recent mass shootings, according to White House poll reports. Feinstein bills. 2 gun bills have been reintroduced by Senator Dianne Feinstein of California and co-sponsored by dozens of Senate Democrats. One would raise the age of purchasing an assault rifle from 18 to 21, and the other bill would, quote, ban the sale, transfer, manufacture, and importation of military-style assault weapons and high-capacity magazines and other high-capacity ammunition-feeding devices, according to a release from Feinstein's office. So far, 39 Senate Democrats and 1 independent, Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, co-sponsored the bill that would ban certain assault weapons. One of the co-sponsors is Pennsylvania freshman Senator John Fetterman. There are some types of guns that are exempted in the bill, such as 2,200 guns used for hunting, household defense, or recreational purposes. The legislation also grandfathers in any weapons that were, quote, lawfully possessed at the date of enactment, end quote. 39 mass shootings in 2023. As of Tuesday evening, there have been 39 mass shootings this year, according to data from the Gun Violence Archive, which tracks mass shootings across the United States. Quote, January isn't over yet, and we've already had 39 mass shootings in America, Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts wrote on Twitter. Enough is enough. We must take action to end gun violence. In the House, Democratic Representative David Cicilline of Rhode Island is expected to introduce a companion version of Feinstein's bill regulating assault weapons and raising the minimum age to 21, according to release from Feinstein's office. But any gun-related legislation the Senate is able to muscle through is unlikely to succeed in a Republican-controlled House. And even though Democrats control the Senate with a slim 51-seat majority, including independents, any gun control legislation would need to garner 60 votes to get past a filibuster. House Democratic Whip Catherine Clark of Massachusetts said in a statement that Republicans, quote, have a moral duty to end their partisan obstruction and allow these common sense ideas to finally become law, end quote, and pointed to the bipartisan gun control legislation Congress passed last year. When Democrats controlled both chambers, they, with the help of some Republicans, passed, and Biden signed into law, a comprehensive federal gun safety legislation package that also included billions for mental health funding. The bill provided millions in funding for states to enact, quote, red flag laws, end quote, which allow the courts to temporarily remove a firearm from an individual who is a threat to themselves or others, and $11 billion in mental health services for schools and families, among other provisions. Texas, New York. Push for gun control legislation followed the devastating mass shooting at a Texas elementary school in which 19 children and two teachers were murdered, and a mass shooting in New York in which a white supremacist targeted a supermarket in a predominantly black neighborhood and killed 10 black people. Biden said, referring to a ban on assault weapons, that the, quote, majority of the American people agree with this common sense action, end quote. Quote, there can be no greater responsibility than to do all we can to ensure the safety of our children, our communities, and our nation, he said. The Brookings Institution, a left-leaning think tank, analyzed data from the midterm election voter poll and found that 70% of voters identified curbing mass shootings as a top three priority. The poll surveyed more than 12,000 Americans across 11 battleground states. Quote, mass shootings and gun policy are a high priority for voters, regardless of whether they live in rural, suburban, or small or large urban areas of the country. Voters from all geographical areas named gun policy as a key priority at either 16 or 17%, according to the Brookings report. The report also found that 68% of voters surveyed in the midterm election voter poll supported banning AR-15-style rifles. That support for banning those weapons also varied by region, with 82% of voters in urban areas in support of banning AR-15-style rifles, compared to 70% of voters in the suburbs and 59% of voters in small towns. In 1994, Congress passed a temporary 10-year ban on assault rifles, but it expired in 2004, and lawmakers have never renewed the ban. You are listening to the reading of the Iowa Capital Dispatch for January 27th, 2023, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's continue with this week's stories. D.C. Bureau, Government and Politics, Working and Economy, Capital Clicks. Biden, Democrats to U.S. House Republicans, Show Us Your Debt Limit Plan, by Jennifer Schutt, January 24, 2023, Washington. Democratic leaders huddled with President Joe Biden at the White House on Tuesday, ahead of what will be a tumultuous few months, with lawmakers sharply divided on the debt limit and short on time. Quote, I have no intention of letting the Republicans wreck our economy, nor does anybody around this table, Biden said at the beginning of the meeting. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, a New York Democrat, said after the White House meeting that Democrats, quote, resolved to show contrast, end quote, between Democrats and Republicans, and that the House GOP needs to, quote, show us their plan, end quote, with respect to the debt limit. The country reached the debt limit earlier this month. Ever since, the Treasury Department has been using accounting maneuvers called extraordinary measures to continue paying all of the country's bills in full and on time. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen expects those will hold off a default until at least early June, giving Democrats and Republicans a few months to broker a deal. Speaker Kevin McCarthy, a California Republican, promised members of his conference that he would not agree to a debt limit deal without a budget agreement or, quote, commensurate fiscal reforms, end quote. The White House has largely rejected that proposal made between McCarthy and far-right members of his party, saying that Biden will not negotiate on the debt limit. McConnell bows out. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Kentucky Republican, who has negotiated several bipartisan debt limit deals, essentially bowed out of this year's talks on Tuesday, leaving it at Biden and McCarthy's feet. Quote, I can't imagine any debt ceiling provision passed out of the Senate with 60 votes could actually pass this particular House, McConnell said, referring to the benchmark for bills to move past the legislative filibuster. Quote, so I think the final solution to this particular episode lies between Speaker McCarthy and the president. McConnell added he believes, quote, it's entirely possible for the new speaker and his team to put spending reductions on the table, end quote, though he declined to join in the endeavor. Quote, I wish him well in talking to the president, McConnell said. That's where a solution lies. Schumer said that he mostly agrees with what McConnell said earlier in the afternoon. Quote, McConnell made the argument for us, Schumer said. He says the House has to go first. We're just talking that one little step further and saying, yes, not only they have to go first, they have to show us a plan. Vice President Kamala Harris, Schumer, Senate Majority Whip Dick Durbin of Illinois, Senate Democrat Policy and Communications Committee Chair Debbie Stabenow of Michigan, House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York, House Minority Whip Catherine Clark of Massachusetts, and House Democratic Caucus Chair Pete Aguilar of California were all at the meeting. D.C. Bureau, Government and Politics, Justice, Capital Clicks. Classified material found in the Indiana home of former VP Mike Pence. By Ashley Murray, January 24, 2023. Washington. Former Vice President Mike Pence is the latest top public official to have been discovered possessing classified material in his personal home, according to a letter his lawyer sent to the National Archives. A dozen documents with classified markings were discovered in Pence's residence in Carmel, Indiana, in mid-January. The former vice president, quote, out of an abundance of caution, end quote, on January 16th, asked lawyers to review his personal records following reports of secret documents found at the home of current and former U.S. leaders, according to a letter from attorney Greg Jacob to the National Archives. Quote, Vice President Pence was unaware of the existence of sensitive or classified documents at his personal residence. Vice President Pence understands the high importance of protecting sensitive and classified information and stands ready and willing to cooperate fully with the National Archives and any appropriate inquiry, wrote Jacob, Pence's designated representative to the National Archives. According to a follow-up letter, FBI agents collected the documents from Pence's home on the evening of January 19th. The law enforcement agency declined to comment Tuesday when asked about the probe and the classified materials recovered from Pence's residence. The disclosure comes amid two Department of Justice investigations into classified documents found at former President Donald Trump's Florida home in August, and in recent months at President Joe Biden's Delaware home and former personal Washington office. Republicans in the House majority this month promised their own investigation into the discovery of classified material in Biden's Wilmington garage and at a Biden-associated think tank, the Penn Biden Center. Comer defends Pence. Upon the revelation that classified papers had also been uncovered in Pence's residence, House Oversight and Accountability Committee Chair James Comer issued a statement saying the former Republican vice president is cooperating with the panel. Quote, former Vice President Mike Pence reached out today about classified documents found at his home in Indiana. He has agreed to fully cooperate with congressional oversight and any questions we have about the matter. Former Vice President Pence's transparency stands in stark contrast to Biden White House staff who continue to withhold information from Congress and the American people, Comer said. The Kentucky lawmaker wrote letters to White House counsel Stuart Delery and to the U.S. Secret Service requesting information, including who had access to the think tank office and visitor logs for Biden's private house dating back to his time as vice president. Delery responded Monday by saying the requests are under review, but highlighted the, quote, critical need to protect the integrity and independence of law enforcement investigations. Visitor logs for Biden's private home are not maintained by the Secret Service, according to the agency. Virginia's Warner says disclosure raises concerns. Senate Select Committee on Intelligence Chair Mark Warner told reporters Tuesday that the multiple discoveries of classified documents in former and current leaders' homes sparks concern about, quote, intelligence compromises, end quote. quote, I would have thought over a year ago, when the beginnings of this conversation between the archives and President Trump came up, that anyone who'd served in any of those roles of president, vice president, that's still living would say, subquote, go check your closets, end quote, the Virginia Democrat said. An unprecedented search of Biden's Wilmington home Friday uncovered classified material that federal officials took into possession. The search was voluntary and did not require the execution of a search warrant, White House spokesman Ian Sams repeated to reporters on an afternoon call Monday. The search occurred after classified documents from the Obama administration were unexpectedly discovered at the Penn Biden Center by the president's personal lawyers in early November. Biden's lawyers discovered more classified material in the president's garage in his Wilmington home in December, followed by the discovery of a small batch of documents with classified markings in a room adjacent to the garage on January 11th, according to a timeline provided by Biden's personal attorney, Bob Bauer. Special counsels. The exact number of documents and their contents found in Biden's home and office is unclear. Attorney General Merrick Garland, on January 12th, appointed former prosecutor Robert Herr as special counsel to lead the investigation into Biden's handling of classified materials. Garland also appointed special counsel Jack Smith to probe why hundreds of documents marked classified ended up at Trump's Florida home, Mar-a-Lago. The former president returned 184 classified documents that had been held at Mar-a-Lago to the National Archives last year, before federal authorities executed a search warrant to search the club and private residence in early August, finding about 100 classified documents out of 11,000 total documents, according to the Justice Department. Trump is under investigation for possible Espionage Act violations for the handling of classified information that he removed from the White House. The National Archives declined to comment Tuesday. COVID-19. COVID still slowing in Iowa as subvariant looms. By Jared Strong, January 25, 2023. The number of documented COVID-19 infections in Iowa continues to decline, but at a lesser rate, according to state data. The Iowa Department of Health and Human Services on Wednesday reported 1,566 new confirmed cases in the past week among those who were not previously infected. That is about a 7% decrease from a week ago. The department also reported 2,220 total positive tests, a 6% decrease. Those tests include new infections among those who were previously infected, which the state does not report to federal health officials. In a report last week, cases and positive tests declined 23% and 15%. The Midwest hasn't detected the Omicron XBB.1.5 subvariant at the same rate as the Northeast, where it accounts for more than 80% of reported cases, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The subvariant accounts for less than 10% of cases in a four-state region that includes Iowa. It is thought to be more transmissible, but current vaccines have been shown to protect against it, and the subvariant has not caused large spikes of infections where it is prevalent, according to data collected by the New York Times. Among those infected in Iowa, 154 people were receiving inpatient treatment at hospitals on Wednesday, according to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. That is a 13% decrease in hospitalizations from a week ago. Of those hospitalized Wednesday, 15 were under intensive care. The state also reported 28 new deaths related to the virus for a total of 10,566 since the start of the pandemic. It's unclear when the recently reported deaths occurred. About 80% of Iowa counties have a low risk from the virus, according to a CDC analysis of infection rates and hospitalization data. Elevated risks exist in East Central and far Southeast Iowa. Government and politics. Healthcare. Iowa Senate panel approves $1 million cap on non-economic damages in medical malpractice cases. By Robin Opsahl, January 25, 2023. As the Iowa legislature considers tort reform, lawmakers argued over whether state law should respond to individual circumstances or statewide trends when it comes to medical malpractice lawsuits. The Senate Judiciary Committee recommended passage Wednesday of Senate Study Bill 1063 on a 11-7 vote, just hours after a subcommittee recommended advancing the legislation. The bill would put a $1 million cap on non-economic damages in lawsuits against healthcare providers for cases of loss or impairment of a bodily function, disfigurement, or death. Non-economic damages might include awards for pain and suffering, emotional distress, or loss of consortium with a spouse, for example. Senator Jason Schulte, Republican Schleswig, said medical malpractice lawsuits were driving hospitals out of business and talented doctors out of Iowa. The hospital where his brother and two daughters were born closed, he said. He cited insurance premiums as a reason. Quote, I don't know what the West Central Iowa area would do if Denison stopped for financial purposes offering birthing services, he said. But we're looking now to Carroll, to Harlan, to Ottawa, Storm Lake, Fort Dodge, Sioux City, Council Bluffs. Ellipses. That's why these are called nuclear verdicts, because the blast area just keeps getting larger and larger, where you end the services because of the increasing premiums. But Democrats argued that these limits do not take into account the real harm done to victims of medical malpractice, many of whom are facing lifelong or fatal consequences from the incident they file a lawsuit over. Iowa already has a $250,000 limit for other, less severe, non-economic damages, which was passed under former Governor Terry Branstad in 2017. The 2017 round of medical tort reform also established new standards for who could serve as expert witnesses, requiring expert testifiers be certified in the same or a similar specialty to the defendant medical professional, as well as have actively practiced or been in academia within 5 years prior to the incident. The bill establishing this new limit does not change these standards and does not remove current exceptions to lawsuit payout limits in cases of, quote, actual malice, end quote. It also includes a clarification that in cases where a parent or spouse serves as the primary caregiver for a child or disabled adult, the loss of dependent care resulting from their death or severe injury would qualify as, quote, economic damages, end quote, and not be subject to payout limits. Though private school scholarships have dominated discussions at the Capitol in the starting weeks of the 2023 legislative session, Governor Kim Reynolds also named medical tort reform as a top priority this session. Tort reform measures for both healthcare providers and commercial trucking companies failed to pass last year. The governor said in her Condition of the State address that, quote, out of control, end quote, medical malpractice lawsuits were driving OBGYN clinics out of business in Iowa. She highlighted tort reform as one of the ways Republicans hope to help rural areas struggling with a lack of healthcare providers, saying the change would help draw healthcare providers to Iowa. Senator Nate Bolton, Democrat Des Moines, said this perspective on medical malpractice lawsuits ignores the realities those injured in these incidents must live with for the rest of their lives. Lawmakers heard from individuals and legal representatives of people who have received medical malpractice awards, he said. And these financial limits trivialize the damage done to them and their loved ones by taking the decision out of the hands of a jury of their peers. Quote, it's easy to talk about runaway verdicts and shock verdicts in terms of the things we heard today in the plural sense, Bolton said. In the individual sense, call up one of these cases, tell them that they were a, quote, lawsuit lottery winner, end quotes. Schulte said advocates on both sides of this issue had an incredible amount of research and data for why damages limits should or should not be put in place for medical malpractice suits. But he also asked his fellow committee members to pick a side. Quote, I pick rural Iowa and access and facilities and the ability for cash flow of several hospitals, he said. The Senate legislation was amended at the committee meeting to match a parallel House bill, which will be discussed Thursday by a House Health and Human Services subcommittee. Healthcare commentary. Iowa's mental illness treatment system is not fixed yet, especially for children. By Leslie Carpenter, January 26, 2023. As the third week of the Iowa legislative session winds down, it seems that the urgency of the past few sessions to address mental health care in Iowa has faded. Many policymakers seem to feel that much work has been done in the space and that they're ready to move on to other priorities. In fairness, the Iowa legislature and Governor Kim Reynolds have passed a lot of legislation to improve mental health care, including, but not limited to, passing the Complex Needs Mental Health Law in 2018, the Children's Mental Health Law in 2019, and moving the funding stream from property taxes to the state budget. This took coordination, dedication, and collaboration, and it is appreciated. Has Iowa made strides in building mental health resources? Yes, absolutely. The difficult reality, however, is that the need for mental health services, particularly among young people, has blown past the progress we have made. As a mental health advocate, I continue to hear from Iowa families desperately searching for mental health services for their loved ones and being unable to find them in our state. Just because legislation was passed does not mean it is working on the ground and improving actual outcomes for Iowans. We are still lacking staffed hospital beds in both private hospitals and at our two remaining state psychiatric hospitals in Independence and Cherokee. Iowa is ranked 51st in the country, last in the nation, by the Treatment Advocacy Center, with only 2 beds per 100,000 people, when the recommended amount is 50 beds per 100,000 people. Based on Iowa's population, we should have 1,205 beds for adults. However, we have 566 staffed beds. The current numbers, as of November 2022, according to the Iowa Department of Health and Human Services, are 64 state beds, 502 staffed private beds. For children, we should have 416 beds. We currently have 125 staffed beds, 28 staffed state beds, and 97 staffed private beds. Mental health care at all levels is challenged by Iowa's workforce shortage. We fully appreciate efforts this session, both by legislators and the governor, to address the shortage. However, part of the reason for the shortage is that it is difficult to work in a system that is broken and not serving the needs of the patients as well as the healthcare workers themselves. We must take a multifaceted approach. Increase reimbursement rates to allow for salaries more commensurate with the highly skilled services those professionals are providing. Increase access along the continuum of care from the access centers to the hospitals to true hashtag housing that heals in the community. We need to be able to serve patients with the most serious mental illnesses like schizophrenia, who also have complex needs with co-occurring substance use disorders and other medical conditions as well. The policies that can make this happen are in place, but the implementation is not. There are good people at the Department of Health and Human Services who are working diligently to improve the system. We appreciate their efforts and recognize that they need support through the additional funding, staffing, and technology necessary to complete this needed work and oversight. I also urge hospitals and mental health care providers to expand services to those who desperately need treatment all along the continuum. I hope they fully utilize the new tiered rates, which should allow them to serve more inpatients with intensive psychiatric needs. I hope they increase the number of intensive residential service homes, IRSH, for people living with chronic mental illnesses and complex needs. Iowa must find a balance. The Department of Justice rightly determined that Iowa must do a better job of integrating people with disabilities into the community, partly because of the atrocities that occurred at the Glenwood Resource Center. However, as this occurs, we must remember that there remains a need for long-term residential treatment options for people living with serious mental illnesses. Too often, without a treatment-focused setting, these individuals end up in jails, prisons, and emergency departments, where they do not get the help they deserve. No Iowan should be criminalized because they are ill and unable to receive medical treatment. But that's what is happening in Iowa as a result of the severe lack of long-term supportive housing, acute care hospital beds, and state psychiatric hospital beds. This is a complex and nuanced issue, and careful solutions are needed at all levels, from the federal government to the local policymakers. To truly fix the mental illness treatment system, we need collaboration and accountability. I hope every Iowan reading this will take the time to write your legislators and the governor to remind them of the ongoing need and urge their continued attention to this crisis that is still leaving too many to suffer and die. Together, we can make a difference. Leslie Carpenter is co-founder of Iowa Mental Health Advocacy, Iowa City, and a longtime advocate for people with serious brain disorders. And that does it for today's reading of the Iowa Capital Dispatch for January 27th, 2023. I'm your reader, Stephen Gazier. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.